Hello, everyone, and welcome to Road to Cheltenham. The festival is now so close we can almost touch it. I am back and really looking forward to this show and everything that happens between now and to the Cheltenham Festival and the festival itself. Ruby, it's good to be back. Good to see you. How are you?
I'm wonderful. But looking at your background, Lydia, I'd say you're a long way from touching Cheltenham wherever you are.
I'm in Newmarket, actually. I'm in the Hong Kong Jockey Club room of the British Racing School. I was media training some trainee jockeys earlier today. I've got Golden 60 over one shoulder and the Hong Kong Jockey Club logo over the other shoulder. So that's why I'm in Newmarket.
I'm loving it.
Thank you very much. It was great. I enjoyed the show last week. Thank you very much, by the way, to Gary O'Brien, who sat in the hot chair. But it was a really interesting show. But we've got a packed one this week as well, haven't we?
We better, and I'd say we should get kicking.
We should. Something completely different towards the end as well. We're going to be joined by trends analyst Matt Toombs. More of that later. But first, Ruby, we need to get on with all the news. And the obvious place to start is, of course, with Constitution Hill and that gallop at Kempton on Tuesday.
Yeah, hard to call it a gallop. That outing for Constitution Hill at Kempton on Tuesday. But look, there's a couple of different ways of looking at it. Obviously, he's scored bad and he's on antibiotics since, but I don't know, Lydia, only glancing at the bit of work, it looked like Nico de Bonneville realised pretty quickly that Constitution Hill wasn't himself and he's completely off him, and that could be the bit that saves Constitution Hill, or saves his champion hurdle bid, is what I should say. But look, he won't be the first horse, probably hasn't been the first horse this year to work bad. He won't be the last one between now and the Cheltenham Festival. But I suppose the closer you get to Cheltenham, the nearer you are, But the closer you get, the further away you are from it if something goes wrong. And I think with 14 days, Nicky has loads of time, antibiotics, a couple of easy days. He's all of next week to give him one or two bits of work if he so desires to, however much he will need. So look, there's a couple of different ways of looking at it, but I think myself, when I asked this to Danny Mullins on the radio the other night, if I was offering you riding the champion hurdle right now, what would you ride? He'd still have ridden Constitution Hill, and so would I.
Yeah. And you know, it's essentially a chest infection. He had significant mucus. He's on antibiotics. He's going to be rescoped tomorrow, Friday, and they'll be making a decision. They'll know where they are next week. I suppose there were some signs with the form of the Henderson Yard, potentially. Seven of his last 12 runners had pulled up. So, you know, there is that question mark there. I should say he also had a winner at Market Raisin during that time. But in terms of the horse himself, presumably it's not going to be an issue fitness-wise. And there are examples. I mean, you and I could easily name some of horses that have come back from this kind of setback and won at Cheltenham. You're quite close to one of them.
Yeah, Vatour. At least he was ever ruled out. King being the other one who comes to mind who was ruled out, put back in. But Vatour, who was... I'd say going as poorly as Constitution Hill was this time next week, the year involved him. But look, horses can turn around quite quickly. Antibiotics work, and they're no different than humans. You know yourself when you're sick, and all of a sudden you get up, you're not feeling well, and then one morning you get up and you're 100%. That'll be the same for Constitution Hill.
The essential fitness is there, isn't it?
Oh, it is, yeah. I mean, the groundwork, I mean, to the best of our knowledge, he's been in training all year, so I can't imagine a couple of easy days are going to do him any harm. They might, in fact, do him the world of good.
This has prompted much discussion on social media, so we thought we'd add to it. So we all asked the roadies, where next for Constitution Hill? We asked, would it be Cheltenham winning, Cheltenham getting beaten, this season somewhere else, or nowhere this season? What do you think?
I hope Cheltenham winning came out on top, because whatever way you look at it, I dare anybody to lay him.
Well, you're right. Everybody is an optimist and sticking with Constitution Hill. 51% resoundingly said that he would be at the champion hurdle at Cheltenham and winning it. 15% could envisage him getting beaten as a result of this. 18% thought he might run somewhere else. And 16% of the pessimists, nowhere else this season. So that was the thinking. The impact on the champion hurdle market has been quite marked, hasn't it? Constitution Hill is now 4-9. This is with the non-runner no bet firms like Paddy Power, as well, our sponsors who we're showing here. And State Man is now 8-11. He was 1-4 before this setback, and State Man was 5-2. He did go odds against with some bookmakers on anti-post terms. As you say, though, I mean, you know, it's hard. It's hard to think, you know, provided that this is just a sort of Chessington section that we all know, that you would be wanting to field against?
I definitely wouldn't. And look, I guess it's non-runner no bet, and those kind of markets are I don't understand the percentage of them, how bookmakers bet them, what the way they have to cover themselves. But you think of the real market on Sunday week after declarations, what price are you going to be then? What price are you going to be next Tuesday before the race? Non-runner no bet, 4-9. Not my kind of price, but I can't see him being any bigger than that.
Do you think, given that there is, you have to admit, a small doubt, certainly about whether he might be his absolute best, you have to allow that that's a possibility. Do you think that there are two sets of connections who might be ruining having pulled the plug quite so early? I'm thinking about Imperial Pass and Bob Ollinger.
Yeah, probably possibly. And even for the Bob Ollinger camp, do they consider maybe the Grey Horse, Irish Point? Did they consider him as a champion hurdle horse? You know, possibly. I mean, that's probably why you leave horses in. It's probably why horses, you double enter them, triple enter them. Until you see what shape a race is going to take, you're probably not certain where your own horse is going. There are certain horses, of course, if Fabiola's going champion chase, Constitution and Statement are going champion hurdle, Gallop and Champions going Gold Cup. But there are loads of different horses that can fit into other places that if they got lucky could run a big race. And that's why they have entries. That's why you leave them in. And look, who knows what news comes out of Seven Barrows in the next couple of days could determine what gets added to the champion hurdle next Tuesday.
From the Brian Aitchison camp, and he is the owner of Irish Point and also of Bob Ollinger. Robbie Power has said that Bob Ollinger won't be supplemented. He's had a break already, and so it's full steam ahead to Aintree, so he won't be put back in the race. But it seems like they could be tempted by Irish Point. It might not necessarily even need Constitution Hill not to be there, just might need some really testing ground.
Yeah, who knows where the ground is going to be. That'd be a pretty big call. I mean, they've set the stall out about making him into a stairs hurdle horse. They're going to switch him back now. Of course, it can be done, but it would be a big call to stick him in. And of course, it'd be great if he was added to the race, but it'd be a big call.
They're just tempted about potentially liking to keep Irish Point and Chihupu apart, maybe, if they get the chance to do it. How about the mares, Echoes in Rain and Lossiemouth? I mean, it seems that the Rich Richie camp are pretty adamant that they're sticking to the mares' hurdle plan. But how about Echoes in Rain?
Yeah, look, she's been running against the Geldings all year. So it would be a potential for her to go there to be trying and maybe be placed in the champion hurdle. If you're looking at her, look, she's had a couple of goals and hasn't delivered. So yeah, maybe you could. I would have thought, without asking, that she would be switch if the champion hurdle caught up and was a small runner race. I couldn't see Lassie about switching at any point.
No. Okay, so we'll keep an eye on that story and fingers crossed for Constitution Hill, because we all want to see him defending his title at Cheltenham and taking on State Man, who's been in such fine form this season. So fingers crossed. Right, lots more news to discuss. We're going to stick with the hurdlers, Ruby, and look back on the Adonis at Kempton on Saturday. It was won by Khalif de Berlay. He had to knuckle down.
He did have to knuckle down, and obviously this is not directly related to Cheltenham this year, but Khalif de Berlay you would imagine, will be a Cheltenham horse in time. Look, they win a pretty decent gallop in the Adonis. Captain Marvellous booked out, Gimme Five sat second over the second hurdle. But when they got down to the third hurdle, I'd say Harry Cobden was delighted with the position he was in. He was directly behind Paul O'Brien and Gimme Five. Captain Marvellous was in front. But at the third last hurdle, the sixth hurdle in the race, when Kev the Burley jumped up, you could see Harry Cobden moving over to push Paul O'Brien forward. He wanted to make this a test of stamina. Paul committed on Gimme Five to the second last and jumped it well and looked momentarily to have Khalif de Berlay on the stretch. But at the last hurdle, the jump was the other way around. Khalif de Berlay pinged it, Gimme Five got in a bit close, and Khalif de Berlay ultimately outstayed him. I'd say Harry Durham was delighted with how his horse ran. But for me, Khalif de Berlay looked like a horse for the future when he won at Kempton the first time. He looks it again on Saturday, and we saw him winning the Adonis, and Paul Nichols has said he's stall out. He thinks he's a chaser for the future, and I'm sure he is. He looks to be every bit a chaser for the future.
Very much so. And Paul is also talking about the Grade 1 Aintree 4-year-old hurdle as the next stop for Khalif de Burley. Could you see the runner-up, Give Me Five, being a feature in the Fred Winter, but Boodle's Fred Winter at all?
Yeah, possibly, if he has enough experience. We look, we've Matt on later and he'll explain the trends of it to you. Trend-wise, he probably doesn't fit the bill.
Okay, other news as well. We've got Burdett Road and Bottler's Secret, both for different reasons, out of the Triumph Hurdle. Burdett Road, you'll remember, who was a really decent Grade 2 winner at Cheltenham in November and then was thumped by Sir Gino. James Owen, his trainer, has reported he's picked up a minor injury. He's going to be out for a couple of months. It's possible we might see that horse on the flat next. And Bottler's Secret, more of a surprise, because they seem to be all set on the Triumph after his impressive win at Nace. But on reflection, Gavin Cromwell now thinks it's a step too far. He's worried about the jumping in the first half of the race. What was your take on that, Ruby?
I agree with him. I thought he warmed up as he went on in Nace last weekend, Lydia, but I did think he jumped quite high at times, particularly behind. He was very clean and quite high, but he's a horse with a big engine. And look, Fairy House only around the corner, it's a similar grade to the race he won at Nace, and I'd imagine he would go from there to Punchestown.
Okay. More bad news, I'm afraid, in the Queen's Gamble is also going to miss Cheltenham and the rest of the season, so she won't be in the Dawn Run. Her trainer, Harry Derham, reported that she had heat in her legs on Monday. She scanned okay, but they're going to take a cautious approach. And to wrap up our novice slash juveniles, there was the winner of the Dovecot, Ruby, at Kempton, Lump Sum. This was quite a comfortable victory in the end.
It was a comfortable victory. Obviously, Idley Wood and Panjari went a decent enough gallop in front, fiercely proud. Helwyn, Lump Sum dropped in at the back with Willie the Builder. Now, the fifth hurdle, you can see Lump Sum, he's quite low, quite slick. He's very sure of what he's doing. And at the sixth hurdle then, Fiery Point joined Panjari and kept the pace up in this race. But Sam Twiston Davis switches Lump Sum out and onto the second last, jumped it well and landed upsides. Had a little bit of a look at the last and goes to his left a fraction if you've been critical of him. But I thought he jumped it reasonably well and he did hit the line strong. Now, he's apparently going to go handicapping at the Cheltenham Festival, but when you watched his jumping through the race, particularly with cover, he was quite low, quite sleek and knew exactly what he was doing.
He's in the county and the Martin Pipe, and we're going to be talking about the handicaps with Matt later. It's a compliment to Jericho de Repede, isn't it? Because the first and second from this race finished second and third to him in the Rossington May.
Yeah, I know. And look, Jericho de Repede didn't blow everybody away at Doncaster, but he's still unbeaten, isn't he?
He is. He finds a way to win. And there's something, as I've said before, something intangibly classy about him. I can't quite put my finger on it, just the way he moves. Right, chasers. Fairly Hollow, actually sighted on a race course after 791 days and, of course, won.
He did win, and only his third start over fences as well. Like Astrid Meadow jumped out and went a really good gallop. Esponito Bello probably wants further. Rebel Gold and won the race last year, and he bounced back some bit to form. Epson de Who and Ivor the Bonus didn't really get involved. But Fernie Hollow was a bit keen away from the first fence. By the time he got out to the third fence, though, away from the stands, Paul was wide on the track, and he'd settled quite well. He jumped the fifth fence really well. He didn't look like the horse that is essentially a novice against open horses. Now, he did hit the sixth, a fair thump. He got in real deep and got quite high behind. But when they got around to the second last fence, he was absolutely galloping over the opposition. Now, you kind of hoped he would have been, Lydia. Rebel Gold had been out of form. Esponito won. Bello wants a good bit further. And Astrid Meadow, even though he went a really good gallop, had been off for quite a long time. Got from A to B at the last fence. He wasn't extravagant. And he galloped all the way to the line. Decent enough performance. He came out of the race sound, which is, I suppose, a miracle for Fernie Hollow, looking
That's
at his reputation.
News.
It is, but hopefully he'll stay that way. Look, he got two chase runs together as a novice chaser. He got one hurdle run as a novice hurdler. It'll be interesting to see how he gets on as an open chaser. Willie did say on the day, I didn't ask since the Cheltenham was coming too soon. It is coming too soon for him. And whether he goes to Fairy House or Punchestown, hopefully he will make one or the other.
Well, fingers crossed he does, because it was great to see him back. Moving on to the Bobby Joe Chase. Now, this was quite the performance from I Am Maximus, beating Vanillier by 14 lengths, conceding him, was it £12?
Giving him £12, yeah. And I think when you look at this purely mathematically, like maybe time farm people would, or whatever way you want to look at it, this horse runs to a huge figure, I Am Maximus. Look, you obviously had Vanillier, Manila Crooner and Fury Road. Now, Manila Crooner jumped out to go a good gallop in front. Vanillier sat second. I Am Maximus. Second fence, typical of I Am Maximus. He gets in deep and he's quite slow. Now, the fifth fence, when the pace dropped down, all the horses seemed to jump it well. At the sixth fence, I am Maximus out to his left. At the eighth fence, again, really deliberate. And when he gets in deep, he does take him a while to get over his fences. And again, at the 11th fence, at the 13th fence, Vanilla jumped to the lead and was in control of the race. Three out then, it does look a match. I am Maximus is coming behind Vanilla. But when they get to the second last, after going left at the previous God knows how many fences, I am Maximus goes straight. He just is a quirky individual. And then at the last fence, when Jody McGarvey gave him a squeeze, he puts down, but he actually doesn't touch the jump. He clears the jump. He just takes an extra stride and Jody's body weight has gone forward and he pulls away to win really well. Now, if you put a mark on it, he's probably ran somewhere around 170, if you're taking the Vanilla literally. He could have run to a huge figure. As for his jumping, he is deliberate, but he doesn't fall.
In terms of your assessment about the figure that he's run to, that chimes with Willie Mullins' thoughts immediately after the race.
He's just a funny horse, but he has huge ability. And the older he gets, he's just maturing and his ability is coming out. You know, I thought it was a huge performance to give that sort of weight to a horse like Vanilla. And what he did between the last two, from the second last home, I thought was fantastic. He find his own rhythm and find his own way of going. And once he's happy, anything can happen, as we saw there today. I'd certainly love if, he's a Gold Cup horse in the making, I think.
So there was Willie Mullins talking about future Gold Cups, but saying that the Grand National is the race in the short-term plan. Here is the betting for the National with our sponsors, Paddy Power. The 1-2 from the Bobby Joe, I am Maximus and Vanilla are the 10-1 joint favourites ahead of the title holder, Corrett Rambler, at 12-1. Now, there was a really interesting and thoughtful point from Rob White on Twitter, or X as we're now meant to call it. Here it is. And he's wondering about this panel that assesses the jumping of runners entered in the Grand National. He makes the note that most of his runs over fences mention mistakes, lacking fluency, jumped awkwardly. He points out that the panel have the ability to closely scrutinise horses entered in the race that have made jumping errors 50% or more of their last eight races before allowing them to run. Now, what do you think, Ruby? And what does the race IQ data make of I Am Maximus' jumping?
I understand the theory of the Grand National Review panel. I don't think, in my opinion, that I Am Maximus falls into that bracket. I think I Am Maximus is quite a slow jumper, but I think he's a safe jumper. And if you look at his race IQ data, so if you start with his runs this year, you look at the Bobby Joe chase, so he does lose more speed jumping than Vanilla. He loses an average of 5.57 miles an hour to Vanilla at 5.2, and Fury Road was the best at 3.6 miles an hour. You go to the Drinmore chase, and again, as a novice, I Am Maximus loses the most amount of speed. That's on the approach to the fence until he actually lands. He lost more than found a 50, let's be clear about it, and Charger, who was the quickest. If you look at him in the Irish Gold Cup, he actually wasn't as slow or lose as much speed as Galloping Deschamps, who lost the most at 5.07 miles an hour. And then if you look at him in the Savills even, yeah, he was the slowest there. He was slower than Capodanno, Jerry Calom, and Galloping Deschamps, who only lost 4.4 miles an hour there. I think I Am Maximus, if he's in any doubt, takes an extra stride and doesn't touch the fences. He just jams on and gets up in the air. Do I think that could be a hindrance to him in the English National? I think it could be a hindrance to him winning the race, but I don't think it'd be a hindrance to him finishing in the money, and I most certainly don't see him ending up on the floor. Now, any horse can fall, but I wouldn't have thought I Am Maximus was one of those.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And particularly Vanilla was cautious as well in his jumping, and that got him too far back last year. So I wonder whether they're two peas in a pod in that kind of way.
I do. I think they are. And I think it could be a hint. It could, to me, could hinder both their performances. But I would expect both to be flying from the back of the last fence when you're not getting to the front.
And the British Horse Racing Authority have pointed out that 50% point about that Rob White was talking about is just a sort of guidance figure. It doesn't tie them into saying that horse and that horse can or cannot run. So it's about an assessment of the individual horses. Right, let's take the obstacles out for a moment and talk about the Champion Bumper, because the last of the last four races at the Cheltenham Festival, of which there still weren't entries, that was rectified this week on Tuesday when they came out. And we can have a look at the Champion Bumper betting. and see that Willie Mullins has, of course, a couple at the top of the market. Maureen is the 9-2 favourite, the mare that won at Punchestown in mid-January. And Jasmine DeVore, the Nace winner, is 11-2. T-Shan for Paul Nicholls next in. But there was also a horse who ran on Sunday, an exciting winner at Nace, William Money, who isn't going to Cheltenham. Let's look at the performance first.
Yeah, it was a good performance. Now, this, we're only going to show you a short bit of the race. Doesn't show the whole race. Obviously, Wingman was quite a difficult ride in front for Harry Swan. But when they got to the furlong pole, William Money and Finney Maguire arrive on the outside. And this horse shows a really impressive turn of foot. He was a winner at Navan prior to this when he beat what set the chance of Willie's. And he has improved from it. Now, it was a really good performance, but he's not the Cheltenham bumper.
No, he isn't. And here's Barry Connell telling us why.
I won't bring him to Cheltenham. And I'm normally not a fan of running them in more than two bumpers, but I think he's entitled to go to champion bumper and Punchestown on the back of that. Probably that's where we'll go, I'd say.
Yeah, Finney rode him with a huge degree of confidence as well. Was he pretty sure he could have picked him up whenever he wanted?
Yeah, he said he thought it was like a bit of work. He jumped in halfway. Yeah.
So you'll be watching Cheltenham with interest as a neutral observer, but do you feel your horse is going to be waiting for whatever wins over there?
Well, I think if we brought him to Cheltenham, he'd probably win. But I just don't like bringing a young horse like that over to Cheltenham with all the buzz and everything. You know, I'd sooner keep it small this year and hopefully be a grade one horse now over hurdles next year.
So really, there is no doubt that Cheltenham yakety yak season is upon us. This horse has won the Cheltenham bumper without even needing to line up.
Look, and maybe he would, Lydia, but look, he'll get his chance next year as an novice hurdler. And then we'll see if he was right or wrong.
we certainly will. No doubt the horse looks very talented indeed. Barry also mentioned this about Marine National, who had taken to Fairy House the previous day with Ennis Kerry, his grand annual entry, and jumped four up the hill to Ballyhack. Gary O'Brien put to him theories that Marine National's breathing was bothering him when disappointing at the Dublin Racing Festival. And this is what Barry had to say.
If you look at him even going back to Punchestown, Killarney, his head carriage is identical in every single race. He always looks like a horse that's looking for air. But that's not an issue. That's not an issue. He wore the tongue strap and he had the same head carriage when he bolted up. He was 5 seconds quicker in his beginners than Dino Blue in the grade one. So, you know, it's not an issue.
So Ruby, he just brushes that aside. He says that the horse's head carriage is identical, you know, from when he's run well to when he's run badly. You know, he's brushed away the idea of the recent tongue tie. That's not the issue. He says it's just the ground. You?
Well, maybe it is, but don't remember too many horses having a wind operation and wearing a tongue tie because they didn't have a wind issue. But hey, maybe he's the first.
Okay. Let's catch up on a bit of novice chasing form that you and Gary didn't discuss. And this is American Mike winning the 10 up, beating Nick Rocket and Minella Kakuna, stepping up to 3 miles, the winner.
Yeah, and it was a decent performance. Obviously, you had Fabri de Chandu, Sanikia, Minella Kakuna, and Nick Rocket all in here. And they went a decent gallop. Second fence, Fabri de Chandu was quite careful at it. And at the third fence, American Mike hit it a good thump and landed out on his head. They rounded up into the home straight then. Manila Crooner grabbed at the first in the straight, which was the sixth fence. But if you watch them like into the back straight, the 10th fence, American Mike quickens up and races at it and absolutely pinged it. But when he got to the 11th fence, he rushed at that one again and made a bit of a mistake. But it was at the fifth last that it really caught my eye, because when he lands here, American Mike is doing an absolute half speed. Jumps to third last quite well. Nick Rocket is coming to try and chase him down. Second last, you're thinking, yeah, Paul is getting to him and going to the last. I thought Paul Townend was going to get the better of American Mike on Nick Rocket, but American Mike kept pulling out and went all the way to the line. I thought, watching it myself, he's made for the turners, going back a little bit and trip. But Gordon Elliott, after watching that, thinks that he should be supplemented to the Brown advisory, and I believe that's what he's going to do.
Okay, why do you say turners? Does the horse remind you of a particular horse?
Half a Black Hercules, to tell you the truth, the way he went through the race. Now, I know he's jumping against 3 milers, and a horse with a bit of pace can always outjump horses that are a bit slower than him. But he just kind of struck me as a horse that has that speed. He rushes at fences, and not rushes at fences. He goes at them. He enjoys what he's doing. So I just thought, yeah, he looks tailor-made for that.
news of JP McManus's horses. This had looked like the plan, that it would be the re-emerging in the pocket for the Arkle, because Oroco had been taken out of it. He's only in the Turners. He would head there, you would think. Factor file to the Brown Advisory and Corbett's Frost for the National Hunt Chase. Unfortunately, however, in the pocket has done the right okie cokie this season. Out in, I'm afraid he's out again. Henry de Bromhead has texted to say that In the Pocket is now doubtful to make the Arkle. He'd need to be supplemented anyway, but that is a shame. They had a chink of light thinking they might make the festival, but now it seems more unlikely than not, Ruby.
Yeah, that is disappointing. But look, if you don't try, you never know. And it was worth having a go with In the Pocket. But look, JP still has a pretty good hand when you look at it. Iroko maybe in the Turners. Looks like Factor File in the Brown Advisory and Corbett's Cross in the National Hunt Chase. So, yeah, again, a little bit unlucky for them. But if you don't try, you never know.
Absolutely. Right, well, that was our helter-skelter run through the latest news. Now we are going to talk about the handicappers and welcome in our guest.
In the Grand Annual, I feel a bit more confident about this, particularly if the ground comes up soft. Master Chewy, I think, is a horse who's very interesting in that. Now, he's got plenty of experience for a novice. His form is stacking up really well. He was he won the Wayward Lad at Kempton, where he beat Nickelback by a goodish margin. He was second to Elixir de Nuts at Newbury. Those two horses have won Grade Ones since, so his form has been well franked.
Now it's time to welcome in our guest, and that's our friend Matt Toombs, who is a trends analyst, and he has been brought on to focus particularly on the 9 handicaps at the Cheltenham Festival, so we don't have to. Only joking, Matt. We will be joining in, Ruby and I. But perhaps you could first of all explain your particular approach to trends and how you think they can help punters and why they might sometimes get in the way.
Yeah, sometimes they're just not used well. The golden rule is to good servant, poor master mentality. Otherwise, you end up blindly backing the horse that best fits the trends rather than thinking about it. See a lot of strong numerical trends quoted, even though they're not very useful. 29 of the 31 winners of the bumper won their previous start. Sounds terrific, till you find out 3/4 of the field comprising 85% of the market were last time out winners. So what we want is the trends that lead to the underbet horses. It's important to start with a theory. Yeah, ideally watching lots of renewals of the race, then research the stats. And one with the Baring Bingham, I think they tend to go steadily. Sectional seem to back that up. Why is that? I don't think anyone really knows. They start in the hush of the middle of the course. There isn't the adrenaline in the jockey's arms there is in the Supreme. Big sweeping bend to get out the race course proper. That all seems to combine to cause the steady tempo. So it's a race that ought to suit horses, settle and have a turn of foot, i.e. horses with speed rather than stamina at the trip. So is that right? And if it is it understood by the market, or does it provide an angle into underbet horses? The stat from the Grade 1 novice hurdle form is, since 1997, Grade 1 winning hurdles at 2 miles, 9 from 17, 85% profit. Grade 1 winning hurdles at 2 miles, 4 or further, 3 from 26, 71% loss. So the stats suggest the theory's right. And crucially, the market hasn't understood the theory. So the speedy types have been underbet. And it's important you don't take trends literally. Last year in Perry Passive won the Grade 2 Moscow Flyer. You apply the theory of wanting the speedy types from good races, not the stayers. You don't just look at Grade 1 form. And finally, never rely on a trend you can't explain. In the Champion Chase, 8 of the 11 odds on shots this century were beaten. Despite 2-mile chasing, most specialist division, generally odds on shots, have a good record in the other open 2-mile Grade 1 chases. And odds on shots like Shishkin and Duvan have got injured, which is part of it. In theory, it's a strong trend. But whilst I note the trends there, it wouldn't put me off El Fabiola because I can't explain the trend.
OK, Ruby, what's your reaction to what Matt just said there?
It all makes sense. Champion hurdlers win the 2.5-mile novice hurdle because they're faster horses. It all makes sense. It's logic. If we can just remember enough of the logic.
And from a sort of training or participant point of view, are trends used at all to help whittle down decision making?
Definitely how races are run. As in, would you run a horse in a Corrie Cup or a Martin Pike? Would you run one in a county hurdle versus a Corrie Cup as well? Things like that. I would definitely a factor into which horse I rode and how I would be advising my horse to run, I suppose. But yeah, you would, more so than trends, like not so much, it's how races traditionally unfold to me is how you try and place the horse.
And what do you make of what Matt was just saying there? I mean, obviously we discussed the Ballymore point several times during many series of Road to Cheltenham, but the point about the Queen Mother Champion Chase, which is a stat he can't explain, can you explain it?
No, I can't. But even from memory, like when the Zertia clashed with Moscow Flyer, Moscow Flyer fell the first year, Zertia jumped into the water the second year. And even the last couple of years, you look at the opposition to Enrigo Mean, both years the opposition has fell away, Shishkin and Edward Stone. I can't explain it, but I can't remember a champion chase where all the participants ran to form. But I can't explain why.
Is it potentially because the fields are a bit thinner? So if one horse, one pivotal horse underperforms, then the race sort of becomes skewed?
I don't think so, because I think you look back through history, what did you ever have? Only maybe two or three to the top of any market. More so in novice hurdlers, there were bigger fields and therefore the favourites were a bigger price, but there was still only a certain amount of horses that you'd put your hand on your heart on the way to the start and say, I really fancy that one.
So this is one problem that we can't, well, not problem, one factor that we can't blame on the modern malaise of the supply problem. Doesn't sound
like. I'm afraid not.
Okay, all right.
There's still the same amount of good horses. There's just less taking them on.
Right. And why would that be? Has winning become too important?
Maybe. I don't know. Even since I started riding it, definitely there is more of an infatuation with handicap marks, and people want the marks. Horses seem to get marks quicker. When I started, a horse had to be entered in a handicap to get a mark. Now you just, when you qualify for a mark, you're given a mark, whether you're going to run a handicap or not. And I think a lot of people look at marks and think, well, if I'm rated that, I shouldn't be in the grade one novice. I should actually be in the handicap. So I think marks are handed out too quickly, too easily.
And what's your take? Do you have a take on that, Matt? Do you think that the sort of the modern owner and the way that racing has become, the amount of money that people are paying for horses, that rather than be a part of a grade one, horses are more often directed towards races they can or are perceived to be able to win?
I think there is a little bit of that. There's a not so much an elite sport mentality. You know, if you looked at, say, tennis, they're only judged by the grand slams. And you get to Roland Garros, Nadal wins virtually every year, but Djokovic and Federer always turn up and take him on. They don't go off and practice for the grass court season because they've got that sort of mentality. Some connections don't have that in racing, I think, and it's a bit of a shame from the sporting point of view.
OK, well, I'm sure we could talk about this all evening, but we actually need to talk about the thing that we've got you here to talk about, Matt. So let's start with the handicap chases, shall we? And the obvious place to start is with the Ultima. And for each race, you at home will be able to see the entries this year in numbers, including the number of Irish trained horses, compared with the numbers from the last 3 years, and also the cutoff point of rating that means that horses that was the last horse essentially to make the cut, as in golf. This is quite a useful guide, isn't it, Matt, when you're looking ahead?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the numbers do bounce around a bit between years, but if you know that the horse is not going to make the cut on, say, 3 or 4 of the last 5 years, there's a good chance they're not put here. And if you do see a horse being run to get a penalty, that can be a big clue.
So, Matt, what is your way into the Ultima?
Well, they tend to go quickly. For many of the jockeys, first ride of the meeting, some of that adrenaline from the Supreme, therefore tends to turn into a real test of stamina at the trip. And punters get sucked into backing unexposed horses, stepping up in trip, thinking they'll improve, and they don't tend to get home. Every winner this century have run in a chase under rules over at least 3 miles. By contrast, punters look at horses that run in marathons, I mean 3 mile 3+, dismiss them as too slow, so they get under bet. 10 of the last 19 winners, including the last 5, have run in a marathon chase, some are of extreme distances. And horses that have run over 4 miles or more are 6 from 140 in this century. You made a 31% profit backing them. And it's one of the most predictable handicaps. 18 of the 23 winners this century came from the front 5 in the SP market. Good race to get stuck into at this stage. So I'd be looking to oppose a horse like I Know the Way You're Thinking, hasn't run beyond an extended 2.5. He's on 1.45, so he is eligible for the Kim Muir, but I guess he'd come here with Percival Agawa for that race. Whereas a horse like the Goffer, who was 4th in the Bet365 Gold Cup, He's got a lovely profile. Six winners, including four of the last seven, have run in the race before. He was 11 lengths fourth of Red Hot renewal of this. Corrick Rambler beat Fast or Slow last year. Corrick Rambler's £13 higher. Fast or Slow is £20 higher. And the Goffer's £2 lower. So the law of averages says this shouldn't be a stronger renewal, and he does look well handicapped.
Ruby, what is your take on the Goffer? I really like the way he tried to mirror the moves of Corrick Rambler and Fast or Slow in this race last year before flattening out.
Yeah, well, I think if you look back at last year's race, Lydia, it backs up exactly what Matt is saying about the pace of the race. If you watch them jump at the first fence, if Fast or Slow, Monbig Genius, the Goffer and Corrick Rambler, they're the first four home. They're in a bunch two-thirds of the way back. When they get around to the 11 fence, they're still all close together, in a little cluster, those four horses, Fast or Slow, Corrick Rambler, Monbig Genius and the Goffer. Up to get to the four out, Monbig Genius has gone forward. He's in sixth place, Fast or Slow is ninth. The Goffer, 12th, and Corrick Rambler is 14th. But by the time they turn off the home turn, four of them are there with Oscar Elite, Oscar Etoile or Elite of Tizzards on the outside. And the four of them come to the four over the second last. Now, the Goffer is the one that fades the most, but as Matt has said, this is a red-hot renewal. Fast or Slow is now in the Gold Cup betting. Corrick Rambler is now in the Gold Cup betting and has won a Grand National since. So, look, this was an above-average renewal of it, but the stamina coming from off the pace was so obvious from last year's race, and of course the Goffer would fit many people's bill.
Okay, so a predictable race and a very much a key form line for this year's renewal. Let's move on, Matt, to the Grand Annual. And again, there you see the entries. You needed at least 136 in the past couple of years. The lowest was 130 in 2015. Betting-wise, 6-1 favourite My Mate Mozzie, still in the Arkle. Will his run style suit here? Samoir, 7-1, and the title holder Madara is 8-1. What's your trend here, Matt?
This is a much less predictable race, and this trend is about horses that have run in the race before. Such a specialist race, very few 20-runner, 2-mile handicaps, and the helter-skelter nature, it doesn't suit a lot of horses. But there's a lot of uncertainty about who gets into a rhythm and has luck and running on the day. So a mistake punters make is to look at horses that have been beaten in the race before, dismiss them as not good enough, when it's often the cards didn't fall their way. And the stat is that in the last 18 renewals, horses that have run in the Grand Annual before, 8 from 107, 75% profit. We've only got Mascara and Melistic from last year, but Ferrero Bamboo is an interesting entry. He was 6 lengths third 2 years ago, going off just 6-1. They've tried intermediate trips. He doesn't look to be getting home. His prominent style of racing, well-suited to an old course Grand Annual. He's the type to go well at price, especially if Phoenicia's horses are running form on the run-up to the meeting. You've talked about cuts. He's in 133 here. But if you look at where the cut came in the original weights, last year it was at number 38 and he's number 33. So though he's a bit lower in the actual numbers, he may still get in.
Okay. Ferrero Bamboo, your take, Ruby?
Yeah, and even to back up Matt's point, you look at last year's race, Masakata, Dino Blue, Global Citizen. Dino Blue and Global Citizen were first and second all the way. Masakata never got any further back than six, so it does suit horse the race on the pace. I mean, look at Ferrero Bamboo, especially say in the December Gold Cup this year with Iridotto. He booked out behind him beside Iridotto to the first fence. By the time they got to the seventh, they were really gone to the four, those two horses, and they were a bit in front. But by the time they got the fifth last, Iridotto and Ferrero Bamboo had spread eagle the field. They were going a really strong gallop. And to back up Matt's point, Ferrero Bamboo seemed to fade off the bend when Iridotto kicked and Fugitive came to win the race. Now, he ran in that race off 133. He's had one run since and is now down to 136 that day. He's actually £3 lower, dropping back in trip for this race. So I can see where Matt has plucked him out of.
Okay. We move on to the Trusted Trader plate, and all who stood their ground in 2021 and 2022 got in. The cut was at 133 last year. The betting sees Cribilli as the 4-1 favourite. That was the horse that fell two out when not done with against Ginny's Destiny in November. He's won at Exeter since. Matt, do you have a strong view on this race?
Not particularly, because it's changing. And if you use trends, you have to be very careful when a race is changing because they get outdated. This used to be a race with grizzled old handicappers. And you and I used to do a preview with the old handicapper, Phil Smith. And he always used to wonder why trainers would run 140 novice in the old novice handicap, potentially run into an Aplutar, when they could take on exposed handicappers in this. I think they're catching on to that now. Four of the last seven winners were novices. And I understand a few shrewdies are looking at, let's be clear about it.
You flatter me, you. This is the horse, Ruby, that I was quite keen on. So knock it down. Off you go.
No, I won't knock it down. 15 novices in the race. If you're looking for an all handicapper that's on the way down, Chamblou has dropped 9. Ciel de Neige is down 17. And the one that really interested me was Strawfan Jack down 9 as well. So there are a few old handicappers that are on the way down. But let's be clear about it. Yeah, he's pretty obvious to me. You can watch him here in the Drinmore Novices Chase. I am Maximus, found a 50. He'd been to the 4 in this race for a long way and faded going to the last. That was a grade 1 level. His next run then was in the Dan Moore behind Uncle Phil, Lucid Dreams, and he had Saint Roy behind him, who'll be well fancied the Grand Annual. So he has the experience, Lydia. Does he want a bit drier ground, though, or is he really going to get home, having watched him in the Drinmore?
Yeah, I think that is a factor. I agree with you, the ground. But I'll give my thoughts on him a little bit later when we all give our one handicap selection at the end of this programme. In the meantime, let's move on to the Kim Muir. Where are the entries compared to last year and the cutoff point that we're talking about? And we can have a look at the betting as well. Percival Le Gallois is the favourite at 5-1. Good chime, Johnny. And Firm Footings are at 6-1. Your thoughts here, Matt?
Well, the combination of getting the best amateurs onto the best handicapped horses is obviously a potent one. Crack qualified riders are a huge advantage. And even without Jamie Codd, Gordon Elliott can usually call on some of the best of them. Barry O'Neill, Rob James can claim 3 in this. And so far, 19 runners have been sent out from Galantra House. 3 have won and 6 have been placed. Gordon increasingly targeted novices. His record with them, 2 wins and 3 places from 9 runners. And neither of those novice winners, that's Milan native and Mount Ida, have run beyond an extended 2-5 over fences. And Firm Footings is a similar type. Showed he handles Cheltenham and beat less than 6 lengths of the Martin Pike last year. Switched to fences, been kept around the minimum trip, running in hot novice chases behind the subsequent Killiney winner, Spillane's Tower, and then leading Arkle contenders Marine National and Hunter's Yarn. Spillane's Tower is now 145 in Ireland. Firm Footings is 140 in Britain, even though he only got chin by him. He's a full brother to the Broadway contender, Monty Starr, half-brother to former Gold Cup fourth, Wanna Lee. On pedigree, you'd think he'd improve a lot for this step up in trip. So he's definitely interesting, particularly non-runner to bet, because he is also in races like the Plate.
Okay. Firm Footings, Ruby?
Yeah, completely unexposed. Did run at last year's Festival Lydia, where he was 6th in the Martin Pike behind Iroko. And that was a pretty solid run. You see him going to the last hurdle here. No Ordinary Joe, Buddy One, Imagine, Might I, Firm Footings. They're pretty decent horses. And the Kim Muir is probably, it is the lowest standard handicap chase at the Festival. His runs of offences have been pretty all right. And I think the one at Punchestown, where Spillane's Tower eventually gets the better of him on the run in. He landed back in front of the last Firm Footings and Spillane's Tower chased him down to beat him. That looks pretty solid now, what Spillane's Tower has done since. Slight concern for me would be 3.25 miles. I know you had Mona Lee and Monty Starr in there, and he's a full blood to Monty Starr. Mona Lee was by Milan. But when you're looking at walking the parks, they definitely have suspect beyond 3 miles.
Okay. Right. Those are the chases. Let's move on to the handicap hurdles. We're going to start young with the Boodles Fred Winter, and we'll have a look at the betting, shall we? Lark in the Morning, 4-1 favourite ahead of Batman Girac. And there also are the entries compared to the previous 3 years. Matt, what's your thoughts on the Boodles?
Generally, that it's a lottery. I'm very cautious about. One theory I do have is that three-year-olds starting early in France, long seasons, they can be second season hurdles effectively in British terms, can be an advantage. So a loose trend around that is that horses that began in French national hunt races, 8 from 84, 74% profit, just because a horse began in those races doesn't mean they started early, but the nature of the programme means they often do. Gaspar Equilando, Flying Tiger, all second season hurdles in British terms. And although Milan Tino only began in September at Otoy, he's interesting here because he had a British mark of 136 going into the finesse, beaten by Sergino, has been dropped to 126. Now, I don't know enough about French racing to give an opinion on the handicap marks those horses are given. So a question for you both. Do you think the British and Irish handicappers can assess French form sufficiently well to give marks, or should we be extending the 3-4 run rule for novices to mean that they should have to run 3 or 4 times in Ireland or Britain to get a mark for the big handicaps?
And cue Ruby.
2 months ago, I would have agreed with you until I read a stat before the Betfair hurdle that involved Oldcastle de Mott. And since the British handicapper has converted the kilos to pounds at a 2 by Dublin rather than at 2.2, so they're 10% lower than they should be, I think only 2 of the 83 horses have gone and won.
Wow.
So I did read that before the Betfair hurdle, and Oldcastle Lamotte probably made a 2 from 84 because he didn't win either. So while some things that look too good often are too good. And that it just hasn't converted, so it's hard to knock something that's obviously not working. So look, if you're looking at the other trend though, as in a horse that started early, it's Batman Jarak, Nara, Cala Conti, Carrie the Blazes, Le Loyalette of Twist and Davis's, Kimmy, and This Man's Oar are the ones in there that have started hurling really early in the season. A key to this race will be the race in Leopardstown, I think, at Christmas, where a lot of those horses ran together. But as regards Milantino, there was a change of tactics with him at Cheltenham on his last start, where he ran behind Sergino and Burdett Road on Trials Day. He jumped out and made the running. He went a really good gallop. He still led them into the straight. And I suppose, if you're thinking he's well handicapped, it's how close he gets to Burdett Road that to me would suggest maybe he is well handicapped. Sergino pulls away from the last, but Burdett Road doesn't get that far away from Milantino, and he has plenty of experience, which I would always like in a handicap hurdle such as this.
Okay, so we're going to move on to the Coral Cup. And in terms of the betting, Sam Agest, who will feature a lot in discussions subsequently, is 11-2 favourite with Paddy Power. Langer Dan, the title holder, is 7-1. Of course, unlucky in the previous festival as well. There is how the entries compare to previous years. And while our viewers have a look at that match, you can talk about the trend that you think dominates this race.
So there's no open grade one and an intermediate trip. So the Coral Cup can attract the classiest field of any of the handicaps. Punters often have an aversion to horses high in the weights, particularly off high marks. They can attract horses that outclass the lightweights here, often en route to open graded conditions races, or sometimes already having run in them. So the trend is that the last 11 renewals, horses raced 145 or more, 6 from 103, 54% profit. Looking at the Boyne hurdle, it looks like Hidden Valley Lakes more likely to go to Aintree now, but DiCapo Glory and Beacon Edge, they're both in here off 1.45, and horses like Langer Dan and Commander of Fleet, who actually prepped in the Boyne hurdle, a conditions race can be a good place to have your prep without giving too much away to the handicapper, particularly in a high-class handicap like this.
Did you see anything in this year's Boyne, Ruby?
I did. I look at that in 1 second, but I think why that points to the 145 plus horses here is how few novices are actually in the Coral Cup year on year compared to the other handicaps. I mean, in the top 54 at the moment, you only have 8 novices, and 4 of those are destined to go to other races. And 54 was the cutoff point last year, and there's 4 of those novices look penciled in for other events. So you're looking at handicappers against only 4 unexposed novices. So that's probably why it favours the older handicappers, which it shouldn't. There should be no favour in a handicap. That's the bit I don't get. But look, you look back at the Boyne hurdle, Hill Valley Lake had a good position. Beacon Edge is good and handy, and so was the Capo Glory. Get to the third last, they're all pretty much in the line. Beacon Edge, the Capo Glory, Hidden Valley Lake. The same at the second last. Now, away from the second last, Hidden Valley Lake is going a good bit better than Beacon Edge or the Capo Glory. And he goes away from the last hurdle and wins well. Now, he's headed for a grade one in his next start. And Beacon Edge and the Capo Glory are both in here. They're both run good races. But I think, to me, this is what a handicap should be. It should be for handicappers, not novices.
Yep, we tend to agree on that. Let's move up in distance and go to the Betemps, shall we? Starting by having a look at the betting with Cletus Pulor at 11-2, Ikari Allen at 7-1. And you can compare what you needed to get a run. They all got in last year. And this entry is much more, it's much bigger. It's much more like the entry of a couple of seasons ago. The trend here, qualifier winners have an awful record. The difference about this race, of course, Matt, is that you have to now finish in the first 4 in one of the qualifiers in order to get a run here.
Yes, and you think numerically that would give them a better chance. But it does tend to be a race where the qualifiers, some of them, the horses are in to try and win the qualifier and win the prize money. Some of them are trying to get qualified with a handicap mark. you've mentioned the fact that last year, the first year under the four qualifier per race rule, that there were 24 declared for 24 places. So you don't have to get up to a mid-130s mark to get in anymore. It was 121, the bottom horse last year. So it is a bit of a qualifier and you get in now race, I think. And the record for the winners is they're 2 from 109 this century in the final. Ted Walsh has Great Call, who won the Leopardstown qualifier. It's been the best guide to this. One of 123 there, three quarters length second of 129 at the Dublin Racing Festival, runs off 136 here. Looks a really progressive horse. Question is he progressive enough to defy that mark in the Potence final?
Now, there was no family bias on this edition of Road to Cheltenham. That was honestly, Matt's work, Ruby. Your view on Gay Cool, objective.
Yeah, look, she's had four runs this year. She was second in the Brown Lad Desperita Bello. She then went and won the trial at, or went and won. She's had two wins and 2 seconds this season. So she's in good form. Can she win the race? I don't know. But the way she'll be ridden suits the race. You watch her in the qualifier at Leopardstown. She dropped in well back. Farouk Delane was quite far forward, even up past the winning post at halfway. She's half to two-thirds of the way back in the field. And then when the business end comes, she arrives with her chance going to the last. Farouk Delane is still in front of her. She kind of grabs at the last and then eventually grinds her way to the front to win by 3 parts of a length. She ran really well behind Maxim at the Dublin Racing Festival. I think, again, looking at how a race can be run and the way she'll be ridden will mean she'll be coming home. Whether that gets her to winning a pretense or not, I don't know. But it's easy to see her running into the money. And if you're betting in handicaps, what more can you ask for?
Okay, we then move on to the county. I think I guessed in last year's series, Ruby, that I've only once ever backed the winner of the county. So I should be saying very little in this section. Let's have a look at the betting. King of Kingsfield is the 13-2 favourite at this stage. And the recent Betfair hurdle winner, Iberico Lord, is 7-1. If we take a look at the cutoff point, same number of entries as last year, 133 it was last year, 134 the year before, and 129 before that. What's trend here, Matt?
Rather than a specific race trend, I wanted to mention the impact of the newish BHA handicapping method. Came in the summer of 2021 and they decided they would drop horses more quickly. So for punters, that leaves the conundrum of, is the horse just on the downgrade or has it been plotted up? At the two festivals under the revised method, we've had three British horses win at big prices, having been dropped a lot. 2022 Global Citizen was down £15, won the Grand Annual 28-1. Third win down £12, won the Potence at 25s. Last year, Fabois was down £9 and won this at 33-1. All three have won graded conditions races over those obstacles, have plenty of back class. So the stat is, at those last two festivals, horses with that graded condition win, they've been dropped since the start of the season, 3 from 25, 256% profit. And this year, we've got the former Dovecot winner, Orcon Risk, who's a big price, is off 137, having started the season off 147. Won the Betfair hurdle off 138 just over a year ago. Chris Gordon's horses are in much better form than they have been for much of the season. So he poses that classic problem. Has he gone? Was he now really well handicapped and ready to be competitive in the county?
What's your view, Ruby?
I saw two more in there as well. That kind of one sort of fits the stat. But I think he's, after coming down and off his first street, he's back to a pound higher than when he chased home statement. And Guard Your Dreams is the other one who's down a long way from winning an international hurdle. He's back down to 137. For me, Orcon Risk, though, the problem with him is, and here's his Betfair hurdle run, he jumped out, he made all to win a Betfair hurdle under Nick Schofield. Went to go gallop, pinged the first hurdle. He's still in front going to the second last, and he lasts home at Newbury in the Betfair hurdle. I can't, someone will correct me, but I can't think of the last county winner to make all. 2 miles in the new course in a competitive handicap hurdle is a hard track to make the run on.
Yeah, I tend to agree. There's no doubt that if the horse retains any of his old ability, he's pretty decent over fences as well. He's now on a good mark, but the doubt for me would be the track. Right, and then we've got the getting out stakes for everybody. This is the Martin Pipe. Sam Agest again at the top at 4-1. Kay de Bourbon at 13-2. And you can have a look there also at the cut-off point. Matt, your views whilst our roadies digest those figures, what your view on this race?
The only ride for many of the conditionals. So lots of adrenaline flowing again. They tend to go quickly. Therefore, usually a test of stamina at the trip. Horses that have shown their form over further often underestimated by punters being too slow. The trend is that horses that have won over the furthest trip they tried over hurdles minimum 2.5, 6 from 57, 61% profit. Better days ahead might be one that's the right type for this. He bolted up over nearly 3 miles at Fairhouse. It was a weak race. He ran okay when beaten just over 5 lengths in the Grade 2 Navan Hurdle. Very tough conditions on that day. Then no match for the promising Asian Master over 2 miles. So, like a lot of horses, got multiple entries here. But he looks like the sort of type who might run well in this.
Okay, Ruby?
Wouldn't disagree. Throw In Search for Glory, Better Days Ahead, built by Ballymore, Nurse Susan and Dodie de Grey to fit that criteria. But to me, Better Days Ahead, this is him winning that maiden hurdle at Fairhouse over 2 miles and seven. It was a pretty weak contest, but he got the job done. He then went to the Navan, where he made a mistake in a really decent novice hurdle at the last. Slade Steele, Lecky Watson and Stellar Story are the horses around him. Yeah, I can see. And he was a good bumper horse. He was going to bolt him and he fell first time up at Down Royal back in October. So yeah, he's definitely the kind of novice I think that fits the bill for this race.
Well, that is our gallop through the handicaps at this point. Hopefully we've given you some food for thought if you're going to be burning the midnight oil and trying to find some winners in advance. We've each got a handicap selection. I think I'm going to start with you, Matt, please. What would be the horse that at this moment stands out in handicaps?
Well, when the weights came out, the one that jumped off the page to me was Gabby's Cross in the Potence final. Rated 127 over hurdles in Ireland, but 140 over fences. So in theory, he's a much better chaser. I doubt that's the case. To me, he doesn't look a good jumper of fences. I suspect he's just developed as a racehorse since he ran over hurdles last in April 2021, returned to the smaller obstacles in October, 3¾ length second of 120 to Buddy One, Galway over 2.6, not getting an ideal run, staying on strongly. The winner followed up off £9 higher at Cheltenham, third Shadow Riders, won by 21 lengths since. Gabby's Cross then ran in the Punchestown Potence qualifier, 1.5 length second to Jodie Taylor off 1.23. He was last three out, got boxed in on the home turn, ran on, looked to finish with running, and Jodie Taylor was winning off a £19 lower mark than his chase mark. Even though that was in November, of the first five, only Alpash Amin has run again over hurdles, but he did win off a £2 high mark on his only run. So the form looks good. Gabby's Cross has a good record fresh, so it's a positive he's been put away after four runs in the autumn. And he got 1.33 for the Potence final. I'd expected him to be close to his Irish chase mark. The way he jumps the different obstacles, very interesting Ruby's view on this. I think he might even be a better hurdler than Chaser, in which case he'd look well in here.
I wouldn't disagree that fences that fences and Gabby's Cross, he's his own way of doing it. Hurdles won't inconvenience.
And your horse, your tip?
King of Kingsfield for me in the county. I just think, since they've changed tactics with him, he likes to run at horses, coming from off the pace. I think that's the kind of horse that wins a county. And I think he's not badly in at 140 as a novice.
Okay, and we've already discussed mine, which is Let's Be Clear About It in the Trusted Trader Plate. I catch him fourth in the Albert Bartlett as well, so he has got festival form. He turned into the straight on the bridle before fading. He really caught my eye at Fairhouse on his penultimate start. I think the in-between trip will really suit him ideally. Also, the handicap company. I do have a slight worry about the ground. I take Ruby's point on that. Right. Thank you very much, Matt, for your company and all of your thoughts. I'm sure the viewers will have found that really, really helpful. As ever, Ruby, thank you also for your contribution. We've got some specials for you next week, because not just one, but two programmes for you. Tune in on Monday evening for our sponsors, the Paddy Power Preview Special, and then Road to Cheltenham will be back with its own special on Thursday evening at an earlier time. We will be advertising it widely. We will be live, we'll have lots of special guests. We're very much looking forward to it. But thank you very much for watching this edition. We'll see you next week.
Watch live racing now on racingtv.com.